Hey everybody, it's John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I record each week here on Mondays while I sit in traffic on my way back from work as a high school instructional coach. Bad traffic is a good time for brainstorming, and so I join in every week, about 11 minutes, to talk shop with things that you can put in play in your classroom like right now. And this week we're joining in with feedback from folks on Twitter for the topic of this week's episode, which is all about getting students engaged when they just want to sit back and let everybody else do the work. We'll get to that in a second, but before we do that, let's talk about some of the housekeeping stuff. First and foremost, podcast is available every Monday. If you like it, hit that subscribe button or give us a nice rating. That's awesome. It really helps people see the podcast, and it puts it on the radar of other folks. Likewise, if you want to engage with me further, talk up further, please do. Message me. I'm on Twitter, at @mehanedu. It's like my last name and like EDU, like education. Or you can find me on my website, which is www.adrenalinerush.com, because I'm fired up about education and I want to change the game in classrooms all over the world. And it's also the name of my book, which is called Adrenaline Rush, and that was released from Dave Burgess on the 16th of June. So we are in stores everywhere now. We're available online and all that stuff's available on my website as well. Adrenaline Rush is all about game-changing student engagement, inspired by theme parks, mud runs, and escape rooms. And so I'm fired up to get you excited and get my kids more excited, especially those kids who don't want to work. Because what I think in my classroom is if a child is excited to learn, I get them to do anything. But the challenge is, how do we get that motivation, right? And so a big part of my job as an instructional coach is not just looking at the educational practices, but also looking at motivational psychology and like what we do to understand how people work. Because the big secret of education is that we're not actually teaching concepts. We're not teaching content. We're teaching kids. And so we got to figure out what makes kids want to work. And if they don't want to work, how do we get them to do the thing that we need them to do? Because we've all tried the, you know, here comes the airplane when we were kids, and it gets this child to open their mouth to eat their peas or their broccoli, right? But nobody in the real world likes chocolate-covered broccoli, where you're taking a thing that they clearly don't want and just putting a little bit of a dressing on it. So the challenge for me as an educator then is to figure out, well, how do I motivate kids who are not motivated? Because there's something that much deeper at play than just my classroom there. Like, there's a very human element that they just don't have a positive relationship with school. They don't have a positive relationship with the class, and they don't have a positive relationship with maybe the students or their classmates. Or maybe they don't have a positive relationship with me. So to kind of answer this question with the very long walk for us, you know, small drink of water. The answer is relationships. I think there's a lot of strategies and technique we can kind of get into the nitty-gritty on with this. But when I'm working with students in engagement, invariably you're going to have kids who just don't care. And that's not even a kid thing. That's a life thing. If I said, hey guys, you know what I really care about is, I don't know, dressage, right? Horse dancing. I could be all fired up about that thing, and I could be like all bouncing off the walls to talk about my favorite, you know, dressage events. I don't know anything about dressage. I just pick something at random. But if I'm talking to an audience who doesn't care, no matter how bouncy off the walls I am, it's only going to go so far, right? I do think that helps for sure as a teacher, first and foremost. Students will never be more excited about what you're pitching than you are as the person who's selling it. So like, a big thing that I have tapped into, it's a good book worth reading. It's a book called Pitch Anything by, I think a man's name is Orrin Clatch or Orrin Hatch. But he talks about how to get people to, you know, buy what you're selling, like a Shark Tank style presentation. And the big thing that he talks about is the lizard brain, which is like the old part of our brains. And psychologists, research psychologists, cognitive behavioral therapists talk about this a lot. The oldest part of our brain is the fight or flight part of our brain. It evolved well before our neocortex and all the fancy stuff that does the higher order thinking. So when we're like cavemen out in the wild, we see things in the woods, we see things in the marshes or the bogs or the forests or the trees, and we don't know what it is. And immediately our fight or flight response kicks in. Basically, if we can't mate with that thing, we immediately then move to that idea of, is this thing a threat to me? And naturally, your body kind of goes there, because that's what kept us alive for millennia as the human race evolved, right? So the challenge is how to get through that, because when all information is being presented, the very first place that is fired up, when you like look at fMRI scans on people when they do these sorts of things, is that fight or flight response, that back part of your brain, like that they call the lizard brain because it's the oldest part of the reptile brain. And so if you hit the reptile brain, it's immediately saying, wait a minute, what's this going to cost me? Wait a minute, is this going to try to hurt me? Wait a minute, what is this asking of me? And people immediately put those guards up. And so the challenge is how to get through that very quickly to get folks to surrender their guards. And it works in marketing, it works in media, it works in advertising, and it absolutely works in education. And what the Pitch Anything book suggests, which I thought was pretty helpful, is the use of intrigue or an element of surprise. Think about an episode of Shark Tank. Have you ever seen like Mark Cuban and you know Damon John and Lori Grenier, Barbara Corcoran, and of course Mr. Wonderful, right? All sitting around the table trying to figure out whether they're going to invest in this project or not invest in this project. And the person starts usually with a canned speech that's maybe a little hokey, a little corny, and they say, "So sharks, who wants to jump in the tank with me?" or something crazy and stupid like that. Everyone kind of does an awkward laugh, and then they say, "Let's see the product." And as they're looking at the product in their hands, you know, they're sort of teasing it over. Tastes good. Yeah, these fit wonderfully. Oh, wow, this looks like a lot of fun. But then they want to get to the nitty-gritty, right? Where are the numbers? Where's the meat? And at that point, that's usually where most presentations die. Because when someone gets into the financials, they're giving away all the information. And that sense of control, or that sense of what they call frame control, right? What are we talking about? Who's in control of that situation? In that moment, the sharks are in control and take the power away from the presenter. And the challenge then is, as the presenter is giving their information, like the people in the audience are sitting there saying, "I already know what's going to say next. I can see by the first sentence where this is going to go, and I'm out." And you hear like, you know, Lori says that thing, "I thought you were going to wow me, and you just didn't wow me. For that reason, I'm out," right? Like, you can kind of see the sharks running the numbers in their head, like, okay, that was a great presentation, but I see where this is going. And so what the Pitch Anything book suggests, which is, I think, a really salient strategy, is like a deliberate sleight of hand when doing a presentation so that you're constantly in what they call frame control, putting yourself in a position where you know what's going to happen next, but the learner doesn't. So they're leaning in. It gets them to surrender that lizard brain a little bit, because then they're letting their guard down and they're anxious for new information in a good way. A challenge in a classroom is how to replicate that, because if I say, "All right, students, we're going to take this worksheet and we're all going to work through it, and when you're done with this worksheet, you win the chance to earn 5 points, or the team with the most points wins," or something like that. Kid knows the stakes of the game all laid out early, and then figures out that they don't really care about those 5 points. Daniel Pink's book, Drive, talks a lot about autonomy, mastery, and purpose as the reasons why people do what people do. And he says, without those three things being present, no real intrinsic joy for learning will ever occur. So when I give students a task and I say, "All right, let's work through this worksheet," there's really no autonomy there. The mastery is, it's either done or it's not done. But the purpose is, well, because I said so. What if I take that same worksheet and I just cut it in a strip? And I take it in strips and I say, "All right, gang, here's the deal. Each of these questions are hidden in places around the classroom or put in Easter eggs." The Easter egg dash challenge was a good example of a thing that we did it. If you didn't see the Easter egg dash challenge, it was a simple activity. I just took a regular worksheet, cut it up into strips, and put them into colorful eggs in the front of the class. As a team, they worked solving an answer. They just went up and grabbed one egg, took it back to their desk group, and solved it. When they had that, they've, quote, earned the right to look for another egg. What this is just a worksheet cut into strips, but they've tricked themselves into wanting to know more information. Again, that sleight of hand, right? Do you know that I know that you know that I know, right? Like, then back and forth and back and forth we go. So a little bit of that intrigue is a really helpful mechanic to employ when in designing classroom activities. Taking a simple worksheet and cutting it into strips, but not telling somebody how many pieces to the puzzle they must collect, and just saying, "Hey, our goal is to collect as many as we can by the end of X number of minutes. Survivors ready, you go," right? There's something about that that says, well, darn it, I'm going to hustle, I'm going to dig deep. And that in itself has an intrigue layer, which can tip the needle for at least a few of those holdouts early. The second big motivator that I use a lot of, and there's a book called Hooked, which is about designing habit-forming products. I think the author's name is Nir Adal, or Ayal. They're difficult to spell. I'll put it in the show notes. But in Hooked, they talk about there are three different types of rewards you can have in a game. And I guess this is all arbitrary. They're all fake taxonomies. But it's a tool like anything else, right? They talk about the rewards of the self, the rewards of the hunt, and the rewards of the tribe. And I think that third one is something I really try to leverage in these activities. So the rewards of the self is like that autonomy or mastery. You want to be the leader. You want to be the king. You want to be the queen, the person who crushes it and feels like you're on top of the board and, you know, get to smile and, you know, all the loyal subjects sit there and worship your great talents. The rewards of the hunt is you get to discover things, find things. Hey, I went out and I killed a bear. Look at that. I thought I was going to kill a deer and I killed a thing way bigger. And you know, feel that sense of discovery, that exploration, that pride, and that joy. But the rewards of the tribe are huge. Like, how do I build in social elements to get students feeling that fire under their feet, where maybe even in a small way, as they solve or move towards an activity, you can single out or recognize students for individual accomplishment as leaders among their peers. And you have to be on the lookout for it. It's not like everybody gets a trophy day. I'm not suggesting that. What I'm suggesting is everybody earns a trophy. And so you find behaviors that you know are look for behaviors, and you find a way to target or pinpoint that individual user that they can get a quick win really, really early in their quote game or your competition like activity in a classroom. So they start to feel like they're being valued, and that by showing up, the class is fundamentally different by virtue of them having been there. So many classes just operate on the rails, where it's like the lecture or the presentation or the lab or the book. And a kid says, you know, whether I raise my hand or don't raise my hand, this class is exactly the same as it was going to be with or without me here. And so they sort of check out. And that makes sense, because if they've had 6 or 7 classes before yours that day, maybe that's what school feels like to them. They feel like their voice doesn't have any value. But what if you saw that kid individually and you say, hey, Billy, or hey, Bobby, hey, Susie, I think you got a lot of potential today in today's activity. I wonder if you could X, Y, Z. It's a small thing, right? It's just like a little bit of a dangling carrot early. But quickly, you remove that dangling carrot by afterwards doing a big old, hey, real quick, we had a great day yesterday in class, blue team, red team, green team, but the person individually who is the MVP who crushed it was Billy or Bobby, Janie, Susie. And like do a small thing that really puts that kid over in a huge way. And they start to feel like that little sense of accomplishment makes them want to work harder. I think in that same book, Hooked, they talk about the loyalty cards from like your favorite sub shop, like a sandwich shop, having like punch holes, right? 5 holes gets you a free sandwich, or 10 holes gets you a free sandwich. And they found that there's no demonstrable differences between if you give like 8 holes or 10 holes. The completion rate is exactly the same. But interestingly, if they give you a card with 10 holes worth punching, and they gave you your first 2 holes punched by virtue of having been there, those quick wins early make you feel like beginner's luck. And in you really were just given a card with 8 holes in it, but the completion rate is incredibly, incredibly high by comparison, because people feel that momentum early. So when dealing with like engaging or disengaged students, finding little ways early to celebrate them, to keep them guessing and to leaning forward, whether you're playing a sleight of hand or whether you're playing a game that's sort of rewarding early, some look for behaviors, but then you can gradually ramp those up where, you know, the reward for correct answers, as Doug Liemov writes in his book, Teach Like a Champion, is harder questions. So yeah, they did this and they got their award or their shout out or their badge on day one, but in order to get it again, well, they have to work a little harder. And now you gradually move those goalposts just a little further away, time after time after time. And it's an easy way to kind of tap into some intrinsic motivation by getting our kids excited to lean forward, because they felt that rush of endorphins early and they're like, hey, I want that, I seek that. So design the activity so that those things are there frequently, but just get a little further apart so they have to work a little bit harder. And then the rewards of the tribe that they're leaning in and being recognized by their peers through that is a great way to build some social acclimation and make students feel like welcome and engaged in any classroom environment. That's it for this week. Thanks so much. I would love to hear your thoughts. Hope this helps. Feel free to tweet at me. I'm at @mehanedu, and I would love to hear your thoughts about how you're changing the game in your classroom. Thanks again. I'll be back next Monday with more.